I don't know what it is about these analytics guys. John Hollinger, who used to be in the NBA, right, Kyle? He used to work for the Grizzlies.
Yeah, Memphis Grizzlies, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
He picks the Kings as one of the teams that will underperform this year. We'll get to that coming up here on The Drive, guys. Before we get to that, there's been a lot going on in the Bay Area today, basketball-wise, because they are celebrating the announcement that the WNBA will be expanding into the Bay Area, team to begin play in 2025. I believe Joe Lacob said they're going to be called the Golden State something. They're probably going to be called Golden State, whatever they're going to be. Yeah, the new franchise likely to be known as Golden State. And Kyle, I know you and a lot of people around here are a little unhappy that we don't have a WNBA announcement to make closer to home.
Yeah, and shout out to the Warriors, you know, Golden State and San Francisco and Oakland and the WNBA. Great for you. But to me, watching this press conference, watching the announcement, we're sitting here watching it on NBA TV a little earlier, and I'm going to just say it pissed me off because the Monarchs were basically robbed from the city of Sacramento, you know, and they were at it high, coming off a championship, tremendous support, tremendous history, tremendous players. And why wouldn't you come back to Sacramento? Why wouldn't that be one? And I understand the glitz and glam of the Bay Area, San Francisco, a lot of dollars, the Warriors organization, Joe Lacob and company, you know, they're viewed as, you know, a great leadership group and things like that. But the city of Sacramento deserves a WNBA team. And, you know, it's sort of like the Seattle Supersonics in the NBA. Like when expansion comes again, Seattle should get a team, and we're the same way. Sacramento should get a WNBA team. There's no doubt that this fan base would support it. It's a basketball-crazed area, and we have tremendous ambassadors, former players that I'm sure would love to be a part of it. Ruthie Bolton, she's right down the street. I think she's in Fairfield right now, or Vacaville, that area. Mm-hmm. She would be a part of, you know, whatever group came back. And so it's disappointing to see it go to San Francisco and not come here to Sacramento.
Well, I know there's been rumblings for years that, hey, maybe Sacramento may get a team. I don't know how close Sacramento ever came. I know that some people on the chat are suggesting that pandemic set back Sacramento's efforts to bring the WNBA here. I don't know. I do know that, well, we all know that the Warriors are one of the most, you know, one of the richest franchises in all of sports. And so they're promising here to put all their financial might behind this effort. And obviously that had a lot to do with it. It is unfortunate, though, because the Monarchs, to your point, one of the original WNBA teams, they did very well here. And for a WNBA team, they were well supported. Ultimately, they weren't making enough money, but the league has, they have a much better TV contract than they had.
Right, then. It's a much, and WNBA women's basketball is on the rise. It's hip and cool to watch right now. The playoffs going on.
The quality of play.
The quality,
way it's improved is staggering.
It's unbelievable. And so I hope, you know, they add another team. There's talk that, you know, a second expansion franchise might go to Portland. That's a great city. I get it and all. But, man, I feel like Sacramento deserves one.
Yeah, the league expanded to 16 teams, according to ESPN, by the 2000 season, but several franchises folded or relocated over the next decade. So they've been very cautious about expansion since 2008 when the Atlanta Dream were added, and now the WNBA full force. Here they go, making the big announcement today. Going into the Bay Area, San Francisco will get the Golden State, fill in the blank, WNBA team, and we'll still wait here in Sacramento.
Still waiting.
Got that championship banner hanging from the Golden One Raptors.
Right. And, you know, during our pregame shows throughout the season,
JaVale McGee's mom was a mom.
Yeah, JaVale. Like, think about that. We could have Pam McGee come back as well and JaVale and do a whole segment with them. And, you know, I mentioned Ruthie. You got Tisha.
Yes.
I mean, it's you know.
Yolanda Griffith.
Yolanda Griffith. Yeah.
Phenomenal.
I mean, it has a tremendous history, the Monarchs do. And when you talk to people in the city, and you talk to fans at the arena, there's like still a love affair with the Monarchs. You know, that's one of those things where, you know, the Monarchs leave, they fold up, and it still hurts, you know, almost 20 years later. And so I hope it comes back. There was a group, you know, I thought with Vivek that, you know, he said, you know, he would try to get them back. But honestly, if with this team going to San Francisco, I think the hopes of bringing the Monarchs back took a hit with today's announcement.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because the WNBA said, so you don't want to expand into different regions. Yeah. As you say, the Northwest. Well, they do have a team in Seattle, right? They still have the Seattle Storm.
They got the Storm. Yeah.
All right. Well, we'll see. Maybe they'll at least play some games up here. I don't know.
Would Sacramento people support the WNBA franchise in San Francisco?
They might if that was the only way to get the WNBA here, and if they marketed it regionally. I understand your point, and you're probably right, but I think, you know, it'd be better than no games, wouldn't it?
Lacob and them? No, the Warriors ownership group coming up here trying to get some of our dollars, and I don't know. There's a rivalry brewing, not between the franchises, but I'm talking the cities now. There's a pushback to, you know, what's happening in the Bay.
Probably should walk that one back. All right. All right, I'm just going looking for way.
You're optimistic, pie in the sky. Oh, yeah, it would be nice. I'm like, I don't know. I think, you know, the Niners, you know, the Giants, the A's, those are the franchises that can bleed over into the Sacramento region. Any kind of basketball, I just think, you know, the hatred is too deep right now, man.
You know, one of the reasons it hurts so much, and this may be an obvious point, but it's because the Monarchs actually came and won a championship. I was there that
night.
Right, when they won the WNBA championship, and that was a huge deal for Sacramento.
Exactly, and that's why I go back to the point I made earlier. Like, it's an emotional thing with Monarchs fans, too. You know, it's not like they were just some regular, ordinary franchise. They were a winning franchise, and then to fold up like that, you know, there's some PTSD, some scars that were left from that night.
Yeah, and I think one of the reasons it hurts, too, is because they were one of the original franchises in the WNBA, and that was because the Kings were so popular then, and the Maloofs were hot, so it was an acknowledgement of how well things were going for the Kings, and now things are going well for the Kings again.
Right.
So we thought maybe, okay.
And that's maybe why the Warriors get the franchise. Like, if the Warriors weren't who they were, mm-hmm. would they be actually getting the WNBA franchise? But, you know, around the league, Golden State, the Warriors organization, is looked at as the model organization around the league, and so now they get the franchise.
Do you agree with this? Joe Lacob, he was involved in a forerunner of the WNBA, the ABL, I think, which was a women's league, mm-hmm. American Basketball League. Anyway, yeah, he owned the San Jose Lasers. I never saw them, but I remember that. But he says, look, I really think we should play during basketball season in the winter. What do you think of that?
No, I disagree. I disagree. I mean, I think it would be fine. I think people would come. But I like the idea of the WNBA having the summer, having basketball, you know, the summer all to itself. Then you would have to be, let's say you play during the season. Golden One Center is already packed as is. You have to rearrange the concerts. You have to look at dates outside of when the Kings play. I just think, you know, summer basketball is missing. That's one thing I miss here in Sacramento. It's like when the Kings season ends, it's like, man, we got to wait 6 months, 5 months again for basketball. If you have the Monarchs starting up in late May, then you're like, you know, you're not starved as much for basketball anymore.
Yeah, and I would think also if you're a WNBA owner, you would have to spend more money to get players who are normally in Europe during the regular basketball season to say, no, we're not going to go to Europe. We're going to come here and play for you. That would cost more money.
Yeah, it would cost more money. And fortunately, I feel like we're seeing less and less of that, you know, players going overseas, you know. And that's a whole different conversation that WNBA players are trying to fight. Obviously, you know, raising salaries, raising wages, that kind of thing. But, you know, during the off season, that's when a lot of people do go to Europe. And so I like the way it is. I like
it. Says the guy who just came back from Paris.
I know, from Paris. I was out in Paris. Oui, bonjour. But, you know, I think the summer is perfect for WNBA because, like I said, by like June, I'm starving. I'm like, I need some events. I need some games to go to around here.
I wonder if there's any chance of one of the existing teams that's not doing well looking around and maybe moving. You don't see that a lot. We've seen it some in the WNBA. But I wonder if that's really, at this point, our last hope of getting a team again.
Yeah, but, you know, with that being said, an hour and 15 minutes down the road is this new Golden State. Like, that's putting them really close together.
I think Stephen A. said it's only like 40 minutes. Did you hear that during the series?
What kind of, how's he driving? What kind of,
I know.
He got police escort, right? That's that police escort for Stephen A. right there.
All right, congratulations, Joe Lacob. We also have this basketball-wise in the Athletic today. John Hollinger, as we mentioned earlier, as you may know, John Hollinger, he's an analytics guy. Mm-hmm. He writes for The Athletic now, used to be a member of the Grizzlies analytics department. And he comes up with here, Kyle Draper, five teams I expect to fall short of expectations this year. Five teams I expect to fall short of expectations. Okay. Got the Phoenix Suns in there.
We've talked about that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You and I disagree. We
disagree. I think the Suns will be right around that mark.
Interesting. The scientist agrees with me. But I, you know, that's, he says Oklahoma City, they will underperform.
And, but what was OKC's number that he had?
Their over under is 44.5. So he has them under 44.5.
There's some people that predict OKC can win 50 games. I was watching ESPN earlier today and somebody's like, oh, OKC is the team to beat. You know, they're going to be so great. I don't know about that, but I got them right around 44.5. I got them battling for that six seed or something like that. Yeah,
they won 40 last year, and they get Chet Holmgren now.
Yeah, and they're a better team. They're going to be a better team. Yeah.
He's also got for underperformers the Orlando Magic 36.5 wins. I like the Orlando Magic.
No, I think
they're headed
them
in the right direction. Yeah. And he's got what a dreadful team, the Chicago Bulls, under 37.5.
You talk about an underachieving team.
An underachieving city, sports-wise.
Yeah, sports-wise. You know, and that's one of the great sports cities in our country, obviously, Chicago. But that roster, they have too much talent to be that sorry. You know, you look at Dallas and I look at their roster, and outside of Luka and Kyrie, you know, I could see why they would struggle. They got three. Zach LaVine's a stud. DeMar DeRozan, Vucevic. Like, those guys are good players. They just don't win. Mm-hmm. I just don't understand. And maybe it's the Lonzo Ball injury. He was that point guard that would bring it all together.
There's
and
no there there. Something's doesn't. Yeah, what are you guys? What are you?
It's like making a dish with the best ingredients, but when you finally cook it and put it together, it tastes like blah. You mm-hmm, know, mm-hmm. Something's missing,
yep.
and it might be that point guard position. That's an underachieving team. I'm surprised they didn't make any moves this offseason.
Yeah.
Like try to trade a Vucevic, try to trade a LaVine.
Yeah.
You know, go
they
out
seem
there.
To think, hey, we're good here.
Yeah, they're just running it back. It just doesn't make sense.
They're running that back.
Yeah.
John Hollinger, pardon me, also has on his list of teams he expects to underachieve the Sacramento Kings. And we'll tell you why they're on that list when we come right back after a quick break. Drive, guys, Sactown Sports.
Your home for Kings basketball for over 25 seasons.
Sactown Sports.
Sunday night, 49ers and Cowboys, and you've also got the Kings playing the Toronto Raptors Sunday evening in Vancouver. Kyle Draper, it looks like we are going to be able to watch the Kings.
Yeah, the Kings are going to be streaming it on their site, kings.com. Make sure you check it out. So that's one of those nights where you have both screens going, right? You've
got
the Niners on TV, or you're listening to it on Sactown Sports 1140, or watching the Kings as well. And so I know where I'll be Sunday night.
What can we take out of this first preseason game? It seems like you are already ready to bury the Dallas Mavericks after they lost a game in Abu Dhabi.
No, and that's the thing, Whitey. You're putting words in my mouth. I didn't say I'm ready to bury them after watching one game. The eye test shows me the roster construction, and they're replaying it right now on NBA TV. They're not going to be a very good defensive team.
They cut it to eight.
Yeah, they cut it to eight, but, you know, the scrubs are out there. You know, I don't see Karl-Anthony Towns out there anymore for Minnesota. But when you looked at what the Dallas Mavericks did last season, they added Kyrie, and they became a worse defensive team. And I know the Kings have their defensive deficiencies, if you will. But the Mavericks, they have really no interior defense. Their perimeter defense, Luka's not stopping anybody.
No.
Kyrie's not stopping anybody.
Luka Doncic.
Yeah, Doncic. No D in Doncic. It's Luka Doncic. You're right about that. So I'm down on him. As far as the Kings and what I'm looking for come Sunday against the Raptors, to me, it's all about Sasha. It is Sasha and Keegan. Those are the two guys I'm keeping my eye on, because I know what I'm going to get from De'Aaron, Malik, all those guys, Sabonis, but I want to see that growth from Keegan Murray. And I want to see Sasha play in, you know, an NBA game. You know, we've only seen highlights. We've only seen him overseas in Europe. And so we hear about the quick release, being the great shooter that he is. I want to see it on an NBA stage.
I asked him one silly question. Well, probably a lot of silly questions, but one question was really silly. When Chris and I were talking to Sasha on Monday, and I asked him about, boy, the crowd's here, you know, in Sacramento. And he kind of went, well, you know, in Europe, in Europe, it gets a little crazy. It's like, yeah, okay.
Yeah, it's a little different. You know, they're setting off fireworks in the arena and everything. I had a buddy who played for Olympiakos out there in Greece. And, the stories he had about the crowds, the officials, it's just, I mean, you talk about going into a hostile environment. Golden One gets loud. I get it. Boston gets loud. You know, all these other places. But you don't fear for your life when you go into some of these arenas.
Yeah, he was nice about it, but he was kind of like, well, you know, it's a little different in Europe. John Hollinger in The Athletic has the Kings listed as one of the teams he thinks will underperform this year. That is, win fewer than 44.5 games. The main reason is something he calls the plexiglass principle. Bottom line, it's just regression. There's an analytics law, if you will, a rule that says if a team improves one year and wins, they're probably going to go down the next year. That's one of the big reasons why he says the Kings are just mathematically destined to win fewer games this year. Not saying he's right, but that's what his argument is based on.
These guys should be banned from writing. The Hollinger, my guy Kevin O'Connor.
And he's your guy.
And those are my guys, but this is the problem with the NBA right now. And, you know, I go back to, you know, some of the decisions that coaches make. They make decisions based on the numbers and what, you know, the stats and instead of the eye test, you know. And what about maybe the Kings just have a great medical staff that keeps the guys healthy? What if the Kings have guys that, you know, play through bumps and bruises and injuries that other guys may sit out? Domantas Sabonis could have missed, you know,
25 games.
25, said, right. Yeah. He could have missed, you know, 2 to 3 months, something like that.
He decided but he to decided, play
so let's not say the Kings, you know, benefited from good health. No, their guys decided to play through that. Keegan Murray had a thumb injury also earlier,
which no one talked about.
Nobody talked about all season long. And I just think, you know, Hollinger, respected basketball guy, Kevin O'Connor, respected. But these guys, the numbers don't back up what the Kings are really capable of. They don't ever come out in the Kings' favor. They're not an analytics darling. Sacramento is. Golden State, meanwhile, yes, they are. But Sacramento, Domantas Sabonis is not an analytics dream, you know? Like, he's never going to be. The numbers aren't ever going to tell the full story. And I think the same thing with the entire Kings roster. So anytime, listen up, Kings fans, anytime Hollinger writes something, anytime my guy Kevin O'Connor writes something, take it with a grain of salt. Don't get all upset and get your panties in the bundle, because these guys aren't going to come on to your side. They don't see what we see night in and night out. The Mike Brown effect, De'Aaron Fox just scratching the surface, Domantas Sabonis, who, mind you, the analytics say he's not a great player. Well, he's a three-time All-Star and All-NBA caliber player. So forget what those guys say about the team. They don't know. They don't see what we see night in and night out. Results matter. The Kings won 48 games. They were the third best team in the Western Conference. They brought everybody back, and they added talent. So I'm expecting big.
We're just getting started.
The Ringer, The Athletic, Bleacher Report. Screw them.
Because it's comical. I agree with you. That's the best attitude. Last year, I remember when the team started well and a lot of people around the country did not respect the Kings and a lot of fans were going nuts. And my advice was, so what?
Right.
They'll find out they're wrong eventually. So I look at this not because I'm trying to get you angry, although there's an entertainment value to that, which I hadn't anticipated. But I mean, it's funny, isn't it? It's like, huh. For example, now maybe you think this is a great sentence. I question the wisdom behind this. Replacing Terrence Davis with Chris Duarte is likely a wash, but does give a bit more size on the wing, something that was in short supply with the bench. I like Terrence Davis, but Chris Duarte, there's a chance he is a significant upgrade in the areas where the Kings need to improve. Would you agree?
But that's what Holland just said that. He said it's likely a wash, but Chris Duarte gives them the size and the athleticism. See, so he contradicts himself
right there in the same.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I think, you know, that's the point I made yesterday. This roster is much better, much deeper, much more complete than it was a season ago. There's no dead weight on this roster. There's no, you know, oh, we can't play this guy because, you know, he can't play. Like Terrence Davis, as much as I love TD, Mike Brown didn't trust him defensively out there, and that's why his minutes. Chris Duarte, that's not going to be an issue. Chris Duarte is a solid defender.
Yeah. He also says basically that the Kings spent so much money to keep Sabonis that they didn't have enough money to improve their depth. And that they were lucky last year that they were healthy because then their bench wasn't exposed. But now they haven't done enough to improve their depth, so that's going to be a problem. And I don't know how you can write that because did you not see the moves that they made?
Right.
Remember,
John Hollinger, all depth moves, right?
Yes. John Hollinger, he knows what he's doing. But this is a guy, I think a couple years ago, the year the Warriors won the championship, I think he came out and said, they're going to win 38 games this year. So, obviously, this is an inexact science.
Wow. And the thing that bothers me about John Hollinger, and I have to pull this up, he had a tweet earlier today, and it was a shot at Sacramento, and it really pissed me off. Like, I think there's something about Sacramento that he just doesn't like. It's something that bothers him. And so I'm looking for this tweet here. Give me a second here.
Why
he said something earlier about imagine being traded to a city like Sacramento or something like that. Mm-hmm. And it really pissed me off. And it's just these guys have it in for Sacramento. And I think, you know, what they're thinking of is the Sacramento of old.
Yep.
They haven't been to a game in the last year. They haven't been to a practice. They haven't talked to Mike Brown or the players or felt the vibe, the difference in this team. When I first came here, and I said this yesterday on the air, that Kings roster was a glorified G League team. Like, there were a lot of players that aren't even in the league anymore.
And that wasn't even all of the problem, right?
And that wasn't even all the problem, right?
Exactly.
And now you look at what Monty has done, what Mike Brown has done. This is a legitimate NBA roster that I think is going to compete, you know, in the Western Conference, you know, a second round or even a Western Conference Finals, potential NBA Finals kind of run.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just, okay, if you're going to make, you know, observations as to why they may win fewer games, that's fair enough. And the whole thing of regression, you know, okay, that's fair enough. But it's almost as if he didn't do his homework on what moves they actually made.
Right.
Oh, they didn't have any money to improve the bench, and the bench was bad last year, so look out. They're headed for problems. I think this is a swing and a miss. If this is a basketball shot, this is Hollinger blowing a layup right here. That's what he's doing, right? Badly.
Right, and you know, I will say, he must know that Sacramento Kings fans, we're not going to take this line down. You know what I mean? Like, we talked earlier in the crossover, you know, some guys write things and have these rankings to get people riled up, to get people fired up. And we know this Sacramento Kings fan base, they're going to be fired up because we've been feeling disrespected for a long time now, and those days to me are over.
Yeah, I think the Kings bench is going to be one of their strengths this year. John Hollinger doesn't seem to agree. He should, I don't know, maybe get league pass or something. We should let him know that they're streaming some of the preseason games. You can actually watch them. We're going to take a quick time out here when we come right back. First, Tony Parker, the Spurs' next French point guard, maybe Wembanyama. We'll get into that next year on The Drive Guys, Sacktown Sports.
Your flagship station for the Beam Team, Sacktown Sports.
Speaking of the Beam Team, 4 of 5 preseason games to be live streamed on Kings.com. So, yeah, you're wondering about the game this Sunday. Fans will be able to stream the Beam Team's tilts against the Raptors on the 8th, Lakers on the 11th, Warriors on the 18th only, and then the Jazz on the 19th. So you get to stream your Kings preseason action, catch up on the Beam Team. And then, you know, Kyle, it almost seems like it's December 22nd here, and you know, opening night is Christmas, and it's like, it's never going to get here. It's never going to get here.
You're right. And I feel like we've been talking about the roster, the team, since last season ended. How long have we been talking about Sasha? It's been
since June. Well,
it's been months, right? Yeah. Like, because right after the season, Mike Brown and company went over there to visit him. And so here we are, like you said, December 22nd, just a few days before Christmas, where we get to see these guys for the first time.
By the way, good news for USA basketball today. Joel Embiid will represent Team USA at the 2024 Paris Olympics. So this is, I don't remember this happening before. It's almost as if he was an international free agent,
right?
And there's a couple of countries he could have played for, and he chose the USA.
Yeah, he could have went to France or Cameroon, and he comes to USA, and I'm telling you, man, book it down. Team USA is going to get the gold. I'm watching ESPN earlier, and Brian Windhorst is like, I don't know if they'll be the favorites. Trust me.
What?
If they get Steph Curry, LeBron, Durant, Tatum, like if our best of the best go, we got to be heavy favorites, right?
Yeah, I would think so. Don't know if they'll be favorites.
Right. Mm-hmm. That's Windhorst just playing that role. So.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. French contingent could be a pretty good team, right? Although once they were very disappointing. I almost said once again, but they were very disappointing in the FIBA.
Yeah, in the World Cup, right?
Yeah.
But they'll be playing on home soil.
Right, exactly.
They'll have the home court advantage come next year.
Mm-hmm. Victor Wembanyama, speaking of French things and French players, you know, there's buzz out of San Antonio, maybe you've heard some of this, that he might be playing like five positions, which would mean he would be playing some point. It just goes without saying that I'm playing sometimes the same role as Trey Jones, sometimes the same as Zach Collins, sometimes the same as Devin Vassell, he said. So, the Spurs are emphasizing positionless basketball,
yes,
and there's talk of Wemby playing being a little point Wemby.
When I first read the headline and saw the topic that we were going to talk about, I was like, this is a recipe for disaster. All you got to do is put a smaller guy, pick his pocket. He's so tall, right? You know. But then I dig deeper, and what they're talking about is positionless basketball. Mm-hmm. They're not talking about him bringing it up, setting up the offense, you know, like Mo Cheeks back in the day, or, you know, Kevin Johnson or Spud Webb or somebody like that back in the day. It's get the ball up, and wherever you are, that's how we're running the offense. And so it's sort of like, you know, just because you're the five man, you got to know where the point guard's supposed to be and what your responsibilities are. And so good for them. They still won't make the playoffs, but good for them.
How good do you think they could be? I know the consensus is, they'll be better, but it's going to take them a while, especially in the West, before they're any good.
Yeah, I think they'll be more competitive what they were last season, but you know, I was down there at Summer League, and I got to see Victor up close and personal, and you saw flashes, and I think that's what we'll see to start the NBA season. You'll see some flashes, but you'll also see some nights where he struggles, you know, a 3-for-15 or something like that. The one thing that he'll provide, though, right from day one is defense, obviously. You know, even his ability to switch out on guards because of his length, he may get beat, but he'll be able to recover because he's so long and athletic. But I don't think he's a Tim Duncan or a David Robinson that changes a franchise overnight. I think it's going to take a few years. You know, some people are predicting that he might be an all-star or something. No, I think he's a ways away from that.
He's going to get shoved around a lot.
Yeah, a lot. He's going to get – and here's the thing. As we know in the NBA, and you know this as well, Whitey, guys are going to be looking to posterize this guy. Guys are reading everything, seeing all the Wembanyama hype. Mm-hmm. And once they take the floor, they're going to be looking at going at him. Barbecue chicken. They're going to feast on this guy. And so he's going to be good. He's going to be a great player eventually. I'm giving him 2 years before I really see the Wembanyama that, you know, can be a franchise-altering player.
You know, earlier you were talking about how you have to play 65 games to be eligible for the awards, but did you know that does not apply to Rookie of the Year?
I was wondering that because there was some discussion with the way Pop coaches, the load management, things like he's the franchise player. You want to bring him along slowly, could he only play 60 games or something like that this season?
I don't know. I guess they decided a young player, it's up to the coaches. I don't know why. But
is this the Victor Wembanyama rule?
That,
you know what I mean?
Because
they knew he was going to San Antonio, and you say, you know what? But, you know, I think it's an uphill battle for him to be Rookie of the Year. I don't think it's a lock that he's the Rookie
of the
Year.
I don't think it's a lock, but I know, you know, I was on with Chris for weeks, and he has Scoot. I think he has Scoot. There's a lot of great prospects. But I think the league wants so badly for him to be Rookie of the Year that I think he's got a real edge in that regard.
You know, he's going to be great, but there's a guy in Oklahoma City who's been sitting out all year, Chet Holmgren, who is a highly touted player, looked like a monster, and he's going to be playing for a competitive team, a winning team. And so I think Chet Holmgren, and I would have to look this up, but for my money, Chet Holmgren, I think he's going to be front runner for this Rookie of the Year. I like him as Rookie of the Year.
You put the two of those guys together on a scale, what do you got? Wembanyama and...
when
they play
about?
Here...
Like one of Kyle, you know?
They can't open the doors at the one end of the Golden One, or they'll just be...
about 250 combined soaking wet. No,
yeah,
that's
okay.
No, but... No,
but they'll pay for
talent.
That as rookies.
Yeah, they'll pay for that as rookies. And, you know, one thing I saw from Chet Holmgren that I would like to see from Wembanyama, Chet Holmgren has a nastiness to him, I think, that people don't understand, you know, a toughness. When he's driving, he's looking to posterize you. You know, when he blocks your shot, he's flexing on you a little bit, too. You know, Wembanyama seems just like a nice, humble kind of kid, you know. Once you get in the NBA, those dudes are looking to eat you for lunch.
Right.
And so I would like to see a little toughness from Wembanyama as well.
Now, maybe I'm misunderstanding you. I agree with what you're saying about Chet Holmgren, and I'm really high on the Thunder this year, but you're not as high on them, right? Or did I?
No. I like the Thunder. Okay. I don't think they're going to win 50 games like somebody I was looking at earlier was saying, but they have the pieces. I still think they're a year, maybe two away from, you know, really making some noise. And this, you know, I find it interesting, and I was thinking about this earlier, Whitey. Sam Presti, the GM out there at OKC, they have assets that they can trade and go for it right now.
Yes.
But he's been reluctant to do that. And so my thinking is he's, you know, trying to build this homegrown squad so that when the Denvers come sliding back, you know, the Lakers fall off, Warriors fall off, who's that next team? And OKC is positioning itself to be that next team to, you know, be a perennial championship kind of contender.
I saw them, as I'm sure you did, most fans did, a number of times last year where they were in games on the road where you wouldn't have thought they'd have been in them late. And a lot of times, more often than not, they failed, but they seemed to improve the more experience they had with those situations.
Right.
And then they won 40 and they got into the play-in. So I thought they're a little ahead of schedule. And then you add Holmgren. I think they have a chance, you know, 50 is a lot, but I think they could win, you know, 45 plus. I don't have a hard time imagining that at all this year.
No, and I 100% agree with you.
And I like Josh Giddey the way he runs.
Yeah,
things.
I forgot about Josh Giddey too. I mean, they have so much young talent. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is a top 10 player in the NBA. You talk about, you know, guys that'll be in the MVP conversation. I think he'll get some MVP votes. And, you know, the thing about the Thunder too, they're such a young team that I think the Josh Giddeys, the Shays, there won't be any load management or things like that. Like, they play hard every single night. They don't take the regular season for granted like some of these veteran teams, like the Clippers, like the Warriors to an extent. And so they're going to be a tough out. I just think, man, when you look at the Western Conference, and I said it yesterday, I think the Grizzlies probably take a step back. Just because I don't know about their hunger level going into the season. But OKC will take a step forward. I think New Orleans, with a healthy Zion, that's the X factor in the Western Conference. That's the team that can be a contender. Because remember,
go any which way.
You know, up until December when Zion was playing, they were the second-best team in the Western Conference. They had the second-best record. Zion got hurt, and they fell off quickly. Memphis held on the rest of the way. But New Orleans is a threatening team as well.
Well, yesterday we talked about teams that scare you in the West, teams that don't, from the Kings standpoint. And the reason I have OKC on that list as teams that our team that's going to have to be reckoned with is because you got so many teams in the West, as we know, that are veteran teams. And the Kings are younger and ascending. And you got, you know, the Lakers are kind of hanging on. They're good. And the Warriors kind of hanging on. And Phoenix has a lot of veterans. But OKC is another young team that's got that really vertical trajectory. That's a little scary.
Yeah, and I'm looking at their roster now. We know about Shea. We mentioned Josh Giddey, Chet Holmgren. But let's not also forget about the Jalen Williams brothers. You know, they're different guys and not related. But Jalen Williams and Jalen Williams. So they have some talent right there, man. Pokuševski's good. I mean, they have some young talent. Isaiah Joe had a tremendous season last year. And I think
they're learning to play the right way as a team.
Right. They're playing. And the way Mark Daigneault coaches them, he's a tremendous coach. They're going to be a tough game night in and night out.
When we come right back, what are you looking forward to seeing the most in the new NBA season? Ooh, it's a Drive Guys Sack Tad Sports.
Your new home for 49ers football in the 916, Sacktown Sports.
Tell you what, the Oklahoma City Thunder getting a lot of love on the YouTube chat here. It's Whitey Cleese and Kyle Draper. Yeah, Patrick Donaldson says Chet just has to stay healthy. And Eric S. says he's gained quite a bit of muscle given his frame in college. Santa Clara Williams getting some love from Eric S. So, yeah, the OKC Thunder garnering some much-deserved respect here as we get ready for
and rightfully so.
NBA
They're
season.
A young, up-and-coming team. They're doing it the right way. They're building something, letting their young guys develop. Now you add in Chet Holmgren as well. And so, yeah, they're going to be fun to watch. You know, there are certain teams that are league pass teams that, you know what, I'm going to stay up to watch or I'm going to make sure OKC's one of them.
Yeah, and isn't it great, especially from a small market standpoint, to see a franchise that, I mean, they had Russ and they had Harden and they had Durant. And they went to the finals, and they almost beat the Warriors to get to the finals. And then Durant leaves, and there's just – yeah, I know that Russ stayed there a while, but, you know, there's like – when Durant left, there's like just a gaping crater there. And they've still been able to figure their way out through all that, and here they are again with a young up-and-coming team. It's really great to see a small market team deal with that so well.
Yeah, and they haven't, you know, sort of – you look at some of the other teams that have struggled, like Detroit – they're perennial, like in the lottery, year in and year out, and there's no hope. But there's always been hope with OKC, you know? They trade Paul George away, get Shea Gilgeous-Alexander. Like, it looks like they won that trade, right? As much as I love Paul George, you know, they won that trade to get Shea. And so there's hope, at least, in OKC, a small market team, unlike a Detroit or somewhere like that.
Yeah, the Kings are clearly a league pass team too, aren't
yes.
they? It's hard for us
yes.
to say because we're biased, but I think they clearly are an up-and-coming, very watchable team because of the way they play.
Yeah, the Kings were the best story in the NBA last season. And, you know, I had friends in Boston that would text me, you know, I get off work from doing the Kings games. Hey, man, just watch your Kings. They're so much fun to watch. They play the right way. They're so enjoyable. So the Kings are a league pass team. They score a whole lot of points, and that's always, you know, fun to watch. Hopefully the defense comes along a little better, but the Kings are in that mix. OKC's in that mix. Who else in the West is in that mix? Like a must-see league pass kind of team. Right? That's tough, right?
I want to see Phoenix, but I don't know that they're, you know.
Right,
they're young and up and coming.
Yeah, they're on national TV all the time. You know,
Houston should be further along in that regard. I don't think they are, but they should be. With the picks they've had.
If Zion plays New Orleans,
yes.
They'll be a fun team to watch.
Big if, though.
Big if. Yeah.
To your point about how exciting the Kings are, this had never happened before. You remember the 176-175 win over the Clippers.
Yep.
That same night, the Warriors were playing, and I was at the Warrior game. They were playing Houston, and after the game, we're waiting for Steve Kerr to come out. And two writers, it was Anthony Slater, and he's watching the Kings on his phone, and Tim Kawakami's like, hey, how's the game going? And I was realizing, I've never seen this, you know, in a Warrior media setting where two very prominent writers, and they're watching the Kings.
Yes.
I'd never seen that before.
That shows you how far we've come, right?
Yes.
This is a new day for Sacramento, and that's why we say they're must-watch TV. You got NBA TV out at Media Day on Monday. You got SiriusXM Radio broadcasting live, too. Like, it's hip to be a Kings fan right now. The Beam, you know, it could have been corny. had we lost a lot of games. You know, if we came out with the beam two seasons
that,
ago,
yeah.
like, what, yeah. what is that? You know, you lit it, what, 25 times? Like, that's a – but when you win, you got this cool new thing. And so, yeah, the buzz is there, man, for Sacramento.
Mm-hmm. What are you looking forward to seeing the most this year in this NBA season? Obviously, we've got things locally. We've got big picture things. Wemby is certainly one right. of the guys on my list.
I'm looking forward to seeing – let me start out east. I think the East is going to be a dogfight in terms of Milwaukee and Boston. You know, I want to see, does Drew Holiday fit in seamlessly with what the Celtics have? I want to see if Dame Lillard and Giannis can each average 30 points per game. Like, how are you going to stop
them? Stephen A. says that's top duo in the NBA
yeah.
right now. I'd say, can we yeah. wait until they play a
so,
game?
What are they then? And we talked about this yesterday. Are they like an NA not applicable right now? Like, they can't even be in the conversation right now?
I mean, they haven't done anything. That's all. They literally have not done a thing. Right? That's a fact. That is an absolute fact.
So can they not be in this conversation? Is that what you're telling me?
They could be one of the league's top duos once the season starts. So far, they haven't done
So they're like on the kids' table while where Tatum and Brown and all these other duos
they're not at
they
the
could
table
be they're
yet.
Not even at the table
dinner
yet.
Hasn't started
what?
Yet.
when do we play Milwaukee? I want to see. Oh my gosh, you talk about a league pass team. I know they're going to be on national TV, but I'm looking forward to seeing the Bucks.
I am too.
I want to see the Bucks.
I'm one of those people that thinks that they're going to be hurt a little bit defensively more than they realize. And
defense
I can't
is
wait
overrated.
See, I can't,
defense is overrated.
Defense is one of the big reasons they won as many games as they did last year. They were one of the top defensive rating teams in the league. And
exactly.
So they're not going to be this year.
They won't be, but their offense is going to be better.
Sacramento Kings are going to be seeing the Milwaukee Bucks on January 14th over there.
I got to wait all – I tell you what, by that time, they're going to be rolling too. That's 2-3 months into the season. By that time, they're going to be scary to – dude, clip this, Simone. This guy, I tell you, man, this guy – you know, I want to go back to the defense conversation too because, you know, when you look at defensive stats – last season.
Which you apparently don't.
No, I don't. I'm trying to tell you why defense is a little overrated when it comes to being a championship-level team. I'm pulling up the stats right now because I don't think Denver was that great of a defensive
team.
They
were mid-15th, literally,
right,
defensive
exactly.
rating.
They were middle of the pack in yeah. defensive rating, Whitey, but they were tremendous. They had an unstoppable force in Jokic. And so that's what I think Milwaukee is going for. Sacrifice a little defense to make a great offense.
Well, you're right. I mean, the game has changed to the point where last year was the most prolific offensive season ever, and it's been trending that way. More and more threes every year. And you're right. And then we see it. I mean, the bottom line is the team that won the championship was 15th. So I get that. And I think that's why maybe some of the talk of the Kings' defensive problems, maybe a little of that is overrated. I don't think so, but I hope so. And I think maybe it is. And I think they're basing everything game plan wise on that fact.
Yeah, and you were right about Denver being 15th in rating. And this goes back to what Hollinger was talking about. Like, if Hollinger said their defense concerns me or, you know, they are not a great, okay, I can respect that. But all, whether it's Hollinger, whether it's the Ringer, Bleacher Report, you know, they're making points that really aren't even there. They're making abstract points. Instead of pointing to something black and white, they were bad defensively. I don't trust their defense this year. As great as their offense was last season, I think it's going to take a step back. Now, if you say that, I respect that more than some of the stuff Hollinger and O'Connor and those guys are putting out.
Okay, here is one thing Hollinger said to that point, and I agree with you, but he did say, Sasha Zenkov adds a slow but crafty shooter who could further juice what was the league's top regular season offense a year ago, .. and could also make a bad defense even worse. Now, that was one of my main concerns when they were talking about bringing him over. Then you see him play and you see the way he plays and you recognize. I know you talked to Monty about it. You
yes.
had the interview with Monty and he addressed this.
You keep bringing that up.
Well, I'm giving you credit because not everybody gets to do a one-on-one with Monty McNair. But we talked with Monty about it, too. The fact that Vezinkov, with his rebounding, his rebounding is going to help them defensively if he rebounds as well in the NBA as he did, because obviously the vast majority of successful defensive possessions end in what? You get the rebound.
Yeah, the rebound.
So if he's a good rebounder, that will help. Yeah, yes. It is. And also, a lot of the Kings were saying he's a better defender than people think.
Yeah, and to the point of defense, we've seen the Kings step up defensively, Whitey, when need be. And the issue they had against the Warriors wasn't defense. It was rebounding and shooting. You add a Vezenkov, who we just talked about is rebounding, that helps you out. The Kings have the personnel to be a much better defensive team than what we saw. And I know that's a priority for Mike Brown, obviously. But it's like
a priority for everybody.
It's not like they got to go out there and get 8 Bruce Browns or go out there and get Marcus Smarts and everything. They have the personnel that can be better defensively. I just think, you know what? Offense is a lot more fun, man. And if you're winning, you're, scoring a lot of points, that becomes your identity.
With all the moves they made, Duarte may be the exception. I kind of was waiting for them to do something that addressed the defensive needs. Some things. Like, I get Vezenkov, Duarte, maybe. But JaVale McGee, I think, is the guy that he could actually make them significantly better. He's not going to play, 30 minutes or even 20 minutes, but I think he can improve them in that regard.
No, I think so. And he's a veteran. He's a big, I would have liked Nerlens Noel to stick around as well. And let's see what he could have given them defensively as well. But, they decided to let him go.
We're going to swing back to the NFL when we come right back. The Trey Lance factor, why the Niners say, meaningless. Next year, Drive Guys, Sacktown. We were just talking about things we're looking forward to seeing in the NBA season. We'll get back to the 49ers in just a moment. I got to ask you, Kyle. I forgot to ask you about this.
Yeah.
I know you're somewhat limited by your professional duties here, but on your list of things you're looking forward to in the NBA, how high on that list is the in-season tournament?
I'm wondering, is that going to be a week off, or is that going to be, are we going to be in Vegas? Like, you know what? I still don't understand the in-season tournament fully. I still don't, which teams are you going to be playing? Like, are you going to be, I don't know. I plan my life around this schedule.
You can't right now.
And I can't. That week, I'm in a holding pattern.
Yeah.
I don't know whether I'm going to be out of town, in town, Vegas, I have no idea. So I'm just a little confused by the in-season tournament at this moment.
I think I know what you mean, because you have the games set up, and then there's a week there where it's, you're either going to be playing in the in-season tournament or you're not, right? And they can't lay that out yet because they don't know. And initially I thought, there's going to be some days off in there, but I think there's going to be games still. You just have to wait and see what they are.
Yeah,
so you can't make any plans.
So I wonder in the league office if they're thinking, all right, let's say for the Kings example, let's say they don't make the semifinals of the in-season tournament. Then there's a group of games, whether it's Lakers, Suns, then they'll play one of those teams. They have to have an idea where if this team doesn't make the in-season tournament semifinals and go to Vegas, then we'll have them play X. You can't say, all right, all of a sudden, let's play Boston a third time. It has to be against a Western Conference team, probably a division team. I'm just a little confused about how they schedule that last week.
Given the fact that you totally dodge my question. I'm guessing you're not a big fan of the NCAA.
Oh, did I dodge it?
I don't know when it's going to be.
You like how I did that, right? That's years of broadcasting experience, man. I might run for office after this.
I asked Sasha about that, and I understand these guys. They can't very well come out and say, I don't like it. But I think he's honestly genuinely excited about it, because his face kind of lit up. Yeah. We have those in Europe. I like that.
Yeah, and Mike Brown is a fan of it also. He says, you know what? Whether it's in-season tournament, summer league, whatever it is, if there's a chance to win a trophy, we're going for it. And so I think it sort of sets the tone, mindset that, these games mean something. They're important. November games all of a sudden actually carry a little more weight than before.
I think I'd love it if I was a coach for that reason.
Yes.
I got a reason to get my team to poke them a little
bit. Get them fired up.
Another
carrot
to dangle in front. Let's go, guys. These games matter.
Yeah, and JaVale McGee was saying, heck, a possible trip to Vegas? Count me in. So he's going to be going all out. JaVale might average 30 and 20 on those in-season tournament games. Watch out. So he's excited, too.
Yeah, I'm already on record as saying they're going to beat Atlanta to win the tournament. The Kings beat Atlanta.
You got Atlanta in you think, why do you say that? Because is Atlanta the kind of team that would go all out and win something like that?
Sure. Or
you know what I mean? Are they
right? And, you know, teams aren't at their best that time of year yet.
Right,
the Kings,
right,
I think, will have a big advantage given that they have so much continuity. They're going to be further along than some of these teams.
Yeah.
Even a team like your beloved Suns. You know, it's going to take them a while to figure things out, right?
Yeah.
I mean, they could be a great team, but they probably won't be in November.
If the Kings do win the in-season tournament, to me, it's – remember when they won the Summer League tournament, everybody was making a big deal? I'm like, Summer League, you know, a few years ago. But if they win the in-season tournament, I think that does say something. I think that does mean something.
I think I agree. We'll see.
But it depends on who they face. What if they face Detroit in Vegas? Detroit people probably think I'm just crapping on them. They're a bad team, so that's why I keep bringing them up. But if they beat Detroit,
I don't think you need to apologize for that. You made your point very well.
Exactly. If they beat Boston in Vegas for the championship, then that carries some weight, I think. That means a little more.
But what if, this has nothing to do with the Kings, but from the NBA standpoint, what if the first, here we are, it's the finals of the in-season tournament. It's the Houston Rockets against the Detroit Pistons, right? That would set back their efforts.
That would be awful. Yeah, that would be like, low ratings. You know, what does it mean, you know? Especially for two teams that might not even make the playoffs.
Right.
Unlikely, who cares?
But it's certainly possible.
Yeah. You're right about that.
All right, we got two teams that are probably going to make the playoffs colliding Sunday night at Levi Stadium. Hear the game right here on Sacktown Sports, the 49ers and the Cowboys. You know, Trey Lance is with the Cowboys now, so there's been a lot of talk about Trey Lance is going to be able to tell the Cowboys all about everything the 49ers do. You think this is a factor in any way, shape, or form?
Zero, zilch, nada. The only thing that might be a factor is the terminology, not the actual plays. I mean, like Kyle Shanahan said, you can see the plays. You know, you got tons of film out there.
I know.
Tapes of years of games, like you can see. But maybe the terminology, if you're the Niners, you switch it up this week. Just so, you know, some of the play calling is a little different so that, you know, the defense is not tipped off. But I don't think, you know, and Trey Lance, I hate to say it, he didn't have a grasp of what they were doing anyway when he was the quarterback. So
Trey, what is that play?
Right? I could never figure that one out.
You're asking the wrong guy, coach. That's why I'm not there anymore.
That's messed up. Why? You're wrong for that.
You said it. I was just helping you out. I was just pushing you over the goal line.
Right, sure, Trey, tell us everything you want. Go ahead. Tell him whatever you want. So I don't think it'll be a factor at all come Sunday.
Kyle said, and you mentioned this, you can see the plays on tape. You can explain what we look at and stuff like that, which usually you can when you stack up a lot of tape over the years, and we've been at it here for a while. So hopefully he's talking to them all the time and making them focus totally on that instead of the simple stuff of watching the tape.
Exactly. And the Niners are so good that you know what they're going to do. You're going to get a healthy dose of CMC. You're going to get some Debo in a lot of different positions. Ayuk's going to try to stretch the field, and you still can't stop it. That's what it comes down to. You know their plays. You got the film. You got the tape. But can you stop it?
Mm-hmm. Bosa said, and you know how Bosa is just kind of, and it was just straight face. They have Trey, so I'm sure they have an idea of our plan. It's like, So the 49ers aren't worried about that at all.
Yeah.
I would think there's maybe a few things where Trey could talk to their defensive coordinator, Coach Quinn, and just tell them, you know, Brock Purdy loves these throws.
Yeah.
And when we played you guys, this really worked well for us. I mean, maybe, but even that's kind of a stretch.
Yeah, I think that's a stretch. And, you know, he does have some of that institutional knowledge, you know, from playing, from watching in the playoffs last season, obviously. Maybe he does know, like you said, the throws that, you know, Brock Purdy, you know, can't make, let's say, or the kind of pressure that Brock Purdy hates, like, you know, if you send two guys from this side or whatever, something small like that. But it's not like Trey was a huge part of, years and years of, you know, game planning and what the Niners did. He was the starting quarterback for 3 years or something. I don't know if he knows how Kyle Shanahan even thinks. Like, right. He hasn't had enough time in the system and to fully understand it. And so I don't think it'll be an issue at all.
You know, that's interesting. I think that's one of the big reasons Kyle drafted him. I remember talking to Jennifer Lee Chan and I asked her that question. Mm-hmm. When they drafted Trey Lance, like, why, you know, this guy doesn't have much experience. And her theory was that Kyle wanted a young quarterback who was so raw that he would learn everything about pro football through Kyle Shanahan's eyes. Everything. Obviously, that didn't work out, and it was a little risky. But here's the thing. You know, when they played in the playoffs, Dallas did a good job against the 49ers offense. It was 19-12.
Yes.
And they got a lot of pressure on Brock Purdy. And he was, you know, he hasn't had a bad game, but he wasn't great. So it's not like the 49ers blew him out and they got to try to figure out how to stop him. They already did a good job of slowing down the 49er offense, and they lost anyway.
No, you know, you're right about that. And so, you know, that was a low-scoring game, a 19-13 game, like you said. I expect this one to be, you know, a much higher-scoring game. One, the Niners defense hasn't hit its stride yet. This time last year, the Niners defense was unquestioned the best defense in the entire NFL. They were playing lights out. They're struggling a little bit, especially against the pass. And so I think this is going to be a much higher scoring game than what we saw in the playoffs.
You know, it depends how you slice it as far as the pass rush, because, and I'm sure you've seen the numbers, the 49ers aren't getting as many sacks, but they're getting more pressure. So, you know, that cuts both ways. Like, wow, they're not getting the quarterback. Yeah, but they're getting in there. Obviously, sacks are better than pressures.
Yeah. And I'm looking at that game, the box score from that game last year against the Cowboys.
And I said 19-12.
Yeah, 19-12.
Oh, was it 19-12?
Well, okay. Pro Football Reference has 19-12. Yeah, okay. I thought it was 13 for some reason. But Pro Football Reference has 12, so I'm going to go with them right now. But I'm looking at, you know, Dak Prescott, 23 of 37, 206 yards, 2 interceptions.
Yep, there you go.
That's the game right there. And so, to me, it's going to come down to the quarterback play. If Brock Purdy plays, has a clean sheet like we've seen, the Niners win. If Dak Prescott throws interceptions, the Niners win. But if it's reverse, that's the Cowboys' only chance, I think. So, Micah Parsons has to get in there and make Brock Purdy's life miserable.
Don't you think this is pretty basic football stuff? But if you're the Cowboys, you hope to slow down McCaffrey to the point where then the 49ers have to throw. That's the only way they can move the ball. And then you can get pressure on Brock Purdy and maybe you get lucky and you tip a couple.
But how do you do that? How do you do that? Because, you know, I've said it a couple of times, the Niners' run blocking this season has been phenomenal. Like, some of the holes that CMC gets, and the Cowboys talked about this, the way he's running, too, he's running aggressive. He's getting downhill.
He got a day off yesterday, by the way. I know we were talking about his wear and tear.
And well-earned, right?
Yes,
And I expect a heavy dose of him this week because, you know, the Cowboys, if I'm correct, their run defense is not that good. Their pass defense is better than their run defense.
Mm-hmm,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. They did do a decent job against the 49ers run game in that playoff game. Mm. But, yeah, and we've mentioned this a million times, Arizona ran for 222 yards against them. So
think about that.
And then the other thing with the 49ers is they have so many different ways of beating you. And like we were talking about how Dallas, if they drop a safety to stop the run game, let's say they have success with that. Okay, then you got man coverage, and you got Ayuk, and you got Debo, and you got Kittle against man coverage. So, you know, it's the old pick your poison thing.
Said yesterday you expect Kittle to have a big game. I expect Debo to have a big game. I mean, Debo's only a couple of years removed, you know, from that tremendous season where he was doing everything for the Niners. You can't single cover that guy. I think he's going to have a field day also.
Here's one thing I've never heard before. Micah Parsons was talking about CMC. And he described him when he's got the ball like tucked away, and he said that's the Dr. Pepper position or
Dr. Pepper, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And they asked him, what do you mean? And he said, I don't know. That's what he said in special teams, that's what we call it. When you really have two fingers and you got it tucked away.
Yeah, you got it tucked.
You got it in a Dr. Pepper pose. But I've never heard that before, and I can't understand what it means.
And he doesn't even know, right? Exactly. But, you know, the way CMC's running, man, it's going to take a lot to get the ball out of his hands.
When we come right back, as we take you up to Thursday Night Football, is the Bears coach coaching for his job tonight? And why are Chicago teams so bad? Next on The Drive, Sacktown Sports.
the only station in Sacramento giving you local sports coverage from 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. Monday through Friday. Sactown Sports.
Sure, but sometimes we need your help figuring out what's going on. This is what Micah Parsons said about Christian McCaffrey. You know, Christian, he's always mindful of the ball. He's always high and tight. He's always in Dr. Pepper mode. He's just really good. And someone said, what's that? I'm not sure. It's just in special teams meetings, that's what we call it when a guy's a ball tucked away, Dr. Pepper mode. And then you can search it. And it appears that no one knows where it came from. So that's one of our football mysteries we hope to solve this year.
Yeah.
Where did Dr.
Pepper mode other come teams have that kind of terminology? Like, do we need to ask Kyle if he knows what Dr. Pepper mode is?
We're going to find out one way or the other. And then we're going to find out also Sunday where the 49ers are right now. I think everyone expects them to win, probably comfortably. It'd be a pretty big dang deal if they don't.
No, it's a huge game. And, you know, I do think it's bigger, obviously, for the Cowboys than the Niners. I think the Niners, we know who they are. We know, really, the regular season is just a tune-up. They'll be judged by what they do in the postseason. I think the Cowboys are looking for a little respect. I think they're looking, you know, to stamp themselves among the elites in the NFC. A statement game, you know. So much talk about the Eagles and Niners. The Cowboys are like, hey, over here, what about us? We're just as good. And now they have a chance to prove that on Sunday.
So if the Cowboys and 49ers is a 10 on the watchable scale, what is the Commanders and the Bears coming up here on Sacktown Sports?
Because it's the only football game, NFL game today, I'm going to grade it on the curve. Like, if it was a full slate of NFL games, it'd probably be about a zero, you know, a half, something like that. I'm going to give it a two.
Two?
I'm going to give it a two. I want to see how, you know, I want to see how he plays. Justin Fields, you know, we haven't seen anything yet this season.
The Bears are interesting because they're so bad.
Right,
you know, their coach,
Matt
Eberflus, he could be coaching for his life. The word out of Chicago is if they lose tonight, he may be gone, even though on their staff they don't have anybody else that they could plug in. So there's some, I don't know, just kind of an odd fascination, like, you know, looking at an accident when you drive by factor with the Bears this year.
Yeah, and because they came in with such promise, hope. You know, nobody expected them, obviously, to be a contender. But they were supposed to be better than this, right?
Competent.
Right, competent. And so you're right. It's like a train crash, or it's like, you know, Keystone Cops watching. You know, they're just bungling everything. You know,
yes.
It sort of reminds me of the Lions just a few years ago. The Lions were sort of that way, and they finally, you know, got a good coach in place and turned things around. And so this is a must-win, I think, for the Chicago Bears.
The bungling Bears.
Yeah.
So why is it? The White Sox, of course, were just dreadful. The Cubs looked like they were going to be in the playoffs this year. They were maybe overachieving a little bit. They faded. They fumbled away their chance to make the postseason. And the Bulls, we were talking about the Bulls, how they're just like they're – it doesn't make sense because they have more talent than a bad team should have, but they're a bad team. And then you've got the Bears, who are absolutely dreadful. And this is Chicago. This is what, market four or whatever it is, or three? How can they have so many bad teams in a market where the fans are passionate, they're starved for winners, and right now they don't have anything close to a winner?
And it's a tough media market, too, as well. And so I got to imagine sports talk radio and all the sports shows out there, you know, the fans have to be so frustrated. Is it the curse of Michael Jordan? You know, you had that great success in the 90s. You know, the Blackhawks went on a run also in the early 2010s, I do believe. And so they were a model franchise. I think they won two Stanley Cups. And so they've had their share of winning. And now, you know, it's – so when I worked in Boston, here's the thing that was so interesting about that city. Like, when one team won, the other teams in the city – wanted to win also. Like, it put them on the clock, you know. And so then it started to become an arms race. Who can win more? The Patriots took off. Celtics won. Bruins, Red Sox, you know, and it sort of became contagious, you know. Now it seems like losing is contagious in Chicago, you know. And so such a proud sports city. I'm not going to feel sorry for you, though. I'm working in Sacramento right now. I've seen the Kings, you know, struggle over the last 16 years before this past season. And so it's just their turn to go through it.
Could it be, you mentioned the word curse, I think. Could it be that the sports fate said, all right, Chicago, look, we're going to let the Cubs have one.
Right, right.
But that's it.
That's it. For the next 100 years,
yeah,
you're
nothing
done.
After
you're
that.
Done.
You ain't getting nothing right. after that, all
right? Right, yeah. Perhaps. And but it's sad because they got the money. They had the facilities. They have the sports fan base. Like, it's a great sports town. But it's sort of like, let's keep it real. New York hasn't been all that good either lately, right? New York has struggled, you know, on all levels. You know, the Yankees and Mets, they're spending all this money and they're struggling.
The Knicks
haven't won since the 70s.
An owner who's not great, I understand that. But, yeah, I mean, from 1973 to now, and the Knicks haven't won a championship.
Haven't done anything.
And they've most of them been bad.
Right.
It doesn't make any sense.
Right, it doesn't make sense. And so, you know, there was some discussion, you know, who would you rather be? Like, you know, and I think we talked about this yesterday. You know, do you want to be the Dodgers of the world, the Yankees of the world, if you're the Giants? Do you want to be the Mets and spend all that money and still come up short? Well, the Dodgers, obviously, they're in. But, you know, those other teams, the Yankees, year in and year out, you know, they have one of the highest payrolls in baseball, but yet they don't get it done. Would you rather be them or a middle-level team, you know, middle payroll team like 10, 11, 12, and come up short? You know, I want hope year in and year out. I don't know if those Chicago teams have hope going into each season.
So how do you do it? I mean, you've seen it up close and personal. We know in Sacramento for years and years and years, nothing in their attempts and they'd fail. But now it looks like the Kings have it right. In New York, they can't figure it out with the Knicks. The Mets this year were sure they had San Diego was sure we've got it, and it crumbled. So if you're owning a team, as an owner of a team in a sport comes to you and says, how do I do this? What's the right way? What would you tell them? An owner of some generic team, we're terrible, and I can't get this right. What do we do?
It's not about the coach. It's not about the players. It starts with the front office, the personnel people. And I would say, let the cooks stay out of the kitchen, right? You know, if you're an owner, don't be, you know, don't think you're some fantasy GM and try to make moves, you're Jerry Jones or somebody like that, Mark Cuban. Let the basketball people, the football people, the baseball people make the decisions. And so I think, you know, when you talk about players, coaches, I think arguably the most important position is that GM, president of baseball operations, or however you want to spend it, depending on the league. Because then you set a culture. And you look at what's happening in Sacramento, Monty McNair knows what he's doing. Like, he's tremendous at his job. We've had GMs come through here. We've had Vlade give it a shot and miss out on draft picks. But yet you get a capable guy like Monty McNair who then picks a coach. Let's not forget, Monty McNair's first head coaching hire was Mike Brown. Luke Walton had already been here.
Mm-hmm.
Then Alvin Gentry took over. So the first time Monty McNair was able to hire his coach, he hired Mike Brown and hit it out of the park. So I think that GM, president of baseball, whatever the position is, I think that's so critical.
It takes patience
and
it takes a plan. And what is the plan? Why is this our plan? And once everybody agrees this is the plan, you got to stick with it.
Right.
It ain't all going to just necessarily
happen overnight.
All right, we're winning.
Yeah.
And if it doesn't, you got to stay with it. And it's hard for owners with all that money. You know, this is the plan. 2 years in, we're terrible. I've scrapped this plan. And then you go try something else, and that's why some of these teams are just terrible forever.
Yeah, and they keep changing on the fly. And
plus, it's hard and it takes a lot of luck.
Yeah, it takes a lot of luck. And we had this discussion yesterday about trading for superstars in the NBA and how it never really works. It just doesn't work because, you know, you're trying to do a quick fix instead of letting it grow.
There's no shortcuts.
There's no shortcuts. You got to let it develop. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, we're getting ready for Thursday night football here. It's the Commanders.
This is in Washington, too, right? Is it? I think it is in Washington.
Yes.
It is. And so the Bears are about to go to 0-5. And I'm looking at the numbers.
I almost said I like the Bears in this one.
Do you really? Come on. Now. You're just trying to be contrarian over there.
Well, I thought about it.
You're
let
me push back on. I'm not going to do that.
I don't know if I want to do that.
Justin Fields, I'm looking at his numbers, 64 completion percentage, Whitey.
Uh-huh.
But he's been sacked 17 times in four games. So this guy is running for his life out there. And so you got to give him some time and give him some protection, you know, to make some plays. Like, he showed flashes last season. This year, it's just been abysmal. I want to see that offensive line. Give him some more time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he could use it. I'll go with the Bears tonight. I don't know if we want to put something on the line.
Do you? No, why? Why would we put something on the line for this game?
Oh, see, now all of a sudden somebody scared the Bears. All right.
Now
I see
all of
that
a sudden
goes.
You are making me a fan Washington. Of Washington. Like, all of a sudden, like, yeah, Washington, they're going to get it.
I don't.
I'm not sure of that.
Let me channel my inner Hollinger and the plexiglass principle. The Bears aren't going to lose every game, I don't think.
I'm firmly confident in Washington tonight. Washington, although they're coming off their game
that's
of the
it.
Year,
that's it.
They gave everything they possibly
yes.
could, and they still lost against the Eagles. They got to be coming back down a little bit.
I like Ron Rivera, former Bear.
Yes.
Do you like or do you buy his explanation for why they didn't go for two to tie the game against the
what
Eagles?
What did he say again? What
he said, and it was a long drive, and he said they didn't go for two. He said they were exhausted. We wouldn't have gotten two. And a lot of people thought
that's
yeah.
Weak.
So
yeah,
actually, that would have
like
that would have given them the lead, right? So they kicked the field goal for the tie.
For the tie,
but yeah. So he said we wouldn't have gotten the two. So
I
riverboat,
don't like
the
that.
Riverboat gambler,
riverboat
Ron, didn't want to roll the dice. You're not buying that.
No, I'm not buying that. But I am buying Washington tonight. Justin Fields on the
How
road.
How many points you giving me?
I give you six.
I'll take
it. I'll give you six. I think Washington. This is a 24-12 kind of game. You're taking that? Look at
Absolutely.
It. Now you're in it?
Yeah.
That's a lot of points I'm giving
it
you.
It is.
There. That's a
I
lot
think
of points.
That's more than, I don't think the line's that high.
Yeah, what is the line? I don't know if we have time to look it up. I'm going to look it up right quick. Bears.
I have your six written
Washington
down.
Line. Let me see
here. I think
here.
It's only like 3.5, but.
Is it 3.5? That's black. Washington's what? 2-2, I think,
uh-huh.
on this season, right? Aren't
uh-huh.
they? The line here. Six.
Oh, is it six?
Ah,
okay.
Sign me up.
Yeah. All right.
Sign me up. Oh, no, well, it may have moved, though, in the last few days. It started out at six. It may have moved the last few
so
days.
So I may be getting cheated, huh?
Yeah. Watch it be like eight or something like that. So you're giving me numbers. You're
and,
giving me points here.
And we'll reconvene tomorrow.
Yeah, let's talk about
that
tomorrow.
And you know what else we should talk about tomorrow? Talk about quarterbacks so much. We should talk about quarterbacks that you thought were going to be really good. And it ended
that
up,
just
they were
didn't.
Not very
just
good.
Didn't. Yeah. All right, we could do
so
that.
Back at you tomorrow. Thanks for being with us. We appreciate it. Thank you, Simone. We're back tomorrow. Kyle Draper, Whitey Gleason, Drive Guys, Sacktown Sports taking it now to Thursday Night Football. Go Bears against the Washington Commanders.